in the new reality.
Ron, are we ready?
We are ready. You can begin at your leisure.
You got 20 seconds, John.
Okay, well, we're recording, so you can forego the 20 seconds.
Okay, great. Is it 1 o'clock yet? Council tells me I can't start till 1 o'clock.
Well, my watch says 1.
It says 2 o'clock.
Okay, we're ready to go. This is the night scheduled for the State Environmental Commission. This is November 7th at 1 p.m. This is a video conference meeting from Las Vegas to Reno. And John, I'd like to have you make sure we have a quorum here. Everybody can, you can tell us who's there. Well, it's going to Carson City, John.
Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we should do an around the room here. We do have a quorum. Well, maybe we can start with
the name tags and the people that are sitting off to the side. You can't see it all.
All right. Well, let me see if I can help out a little bit.
Okay.
Let's go around the roll call.
Why don't you start, Pete?
Pete Anderson. Ken Mayer.
Tom Porta.
John Walker.
Colleen Cripps.
Mike Elgis.
Carolyn Tanner.
Carrie Richardson.
Mark Turner.
Keep going.
Okay, you see it.
Okay.
I just ended Rosemary Reynolds, our counsel, and Jim Gans, our chairman. We have an agenda. John, are there any changes to the agenda? Jim, does it stand?
None that I know of.
Okay. Commission members, can we get a motion to approve the agenda?
We don't have that.
We don't have to do that?
No, we don't have to do that. I'm going to need a public comment.
Okay, first item is public comment. Is there any public in Carson City? None here. Seeing none. We'll go on to item number 2 on our agenda, which is discussion of possible action regarding the amending the State Environmental Commission's rules of practice, NAC 445B.875 to 445B.899. This is a possible action item. And we'll turn the item over to Rosemary Reynolds.
Hi. John has passed out a proposed draft regulation for some of the changes that we're talking about. I just want to make sure everybody understands that this is a jumping off point. This is not the final proposed draft regulation. There's going to be some additional topics that I think could be addressed, but I just wanted to give everybody something to look at while we're discussing potential changes. I would say that during the past year, it's become obvious through the course of our appeal hearings that there's some procedures that need to be addressed. I think especially this past 2 appeals, that one of the questions that is being briefed and raised is the standard of review that the commission applies to the division decisions when they're issuing the permit. And I think one of the best ways to put on the record what that standard of review is to adopt it by regulation. And that's what you are seeing in Section 1, where we're adopting the ground set forth in Subsection 3 of NRS 233B135. And I know that John also furnished a copy of what 233B135 says. That's, one change that we're looking at. Another change that we're looking at is requiring the attorney to appear before the commission to either be Nevada licensed attorney or associated with Nevada licensed attorneys. And we're looking at that, trying to make sure that everyone understands what the administrative procedures are here in Nevada. Those are the two changes that are before you, but these are some of the other changes that we would making it more clear as far as the evidence that the commission is going to accept, perhaps making some changes to Form 3, which is the appeal form that appellants fill out that starts the whole process. Now, making changes to Form 3 wouldn't necessarily require anything as far as the regulations go, but if we change the regs regarding Form 3, then the regs would have to change. Talking about on the briefs that we've been requiring, perhaps putting in the regs some kind of timeline as far as when they're due, as well as addressing what should be included as content, some general topics. Lately, we've been seeing a lot of motions, either motions to dismiss or motions for summary judgment. We could have perhaps a regulation that talks about when those motions are due before the issue is heard. And then another potential topic would be dismissing appeal for lack of prosecution. In other words, if the appellants don't do anything for a period of time, say a year, 6 months, whatever we decide is the best thing to do, then the commission would dismiss the appeal because they obviously don't have any interest in going forward. Perhaps some other cleanup measures in terms of language, for example, the regulations have omitted sections or NRS Chapter 459 and the definition section, which is NAC 445B875, you know, looking at including 459 within that chapter. But that just kind of gives you a list of topics that would be up for discussion. So basically, what we're looking for and feedback from the commission is, one, do you like the regulations that they exist now? Do you think that they're working and we don't need to go forward and do this at all? That would be one possibility. Two would be, yes, we think that, you know, regulations could use some work. And so, yes, we want you to go forward and schedule public workshops, you know, work with the governor's office in order to get permission to move the regulation process forward. And so that kind of in a nutshell is what we're looking at today.
Well, Commissioner, I ask you, can you give us a little bit of background on other commissions within the state of Nevada and how they proceed with their hearings? Are we out of line? Are we ahead of them, behind them in the regs?
Well, as far as what other commissions do, I can tell you that the language on Section 1 that John has given to you, which would change NAC 445B.893, that particular language is very similar to what the Tax Commission has adopted. The Tax Commission, as you may or may not know, hears appeals on tax decisions. The Tax Department has hearing officers on staff, so hearing officers will issue a decision. Those decisions are then reviewed and appealed to the Tax Commission, and from the Tax Commission, they then would go on a petition for judicial review to district court. So that's kind of where that particular language came from. As far as, you know, the procedure, there isn't necessarily anything uniform that you will see from agency to agency. They're all, everybody does something a little bit different and unique. You know, some will specify, if they hear a lot of appeals, they'll perhaps have a little bit more rigid rules than you might see with some others. You know, the licensing boards, the professional licensing boards, you know, for doctors, real estate personnel, you know, they've got their own procedures and they have to follow a different chapter within the statutes, and that's NRS Chapter 622A. So I don't know that there's a good answer to your question, but I can, like I said, give you a little bit of background as far as where this language came from. You know, because commissions who hear appeals are creatures of statute, you know, what they do is will change. because everyone's got their own set of statutes that they have to follow.
I would also inquire of staff, Pauline, if there's something that would work well for staff. Is staff opposed to this, or is staff in agreement? Can you give us any feedback?
Yeah, we're in agreement with this process, and we'd like to work with the commission on adopting some procedures, I think, that will be more efficient in the appeal process.
And your counsel?
Yes. Go ahead, Lina.
Yes, I agree. We would welcome the opportunity to submit some proposed language on a lot of these issues. We've also shared some frustration in appeals on sort of, I think, very general rules. I think a little bit more specificity, but still giving the commission the flexibility to do what it needs to do would be helpful.
I imagine many of the board meetings, many of the board members have sit on some appeals. Is there discussion from the board, questions of Rosemarie or staff, or any concerns or other ideas you might want to put forth?
This is Ken Mayer. I would offer that I think this is a good idea, especially if you could put some kind of time frame. I know sending in appeals with the Wildlife Commission, people are going to want to come with evidence or support material when they show up to speak. But it is somewhat problematic if staff hasn't seen it. I don't really want to. Then you got to put things off. So having some period of time that they have to submit this to, the vision makes a lot of good sense. They can go through it, sort through it, get it to us, so we can look at it prior instead of just springing something on us at the hearing.
This is Catherine Landreth. I agree, and I think there's a sort of a basic element of fairness too when the evidence presented on appeal is substantially different from what was provided to the agency in the first place.
Could I ask one more question on the being represented by? Does it have to be an attorney? Could it be someone that is familiar with the individual that the appeal that wants to more articulate? Someone that could at least state their case for them that wouldn't necessarily have to be an attorney.
Yes. I think that's how it reads now, isn't it?
That's how it reads now.
Yeah, you can be represented by, well,
Rosemarie does. Well, right now, all it says is the parties may appear in person and may be represented by counsel. That's the way it currently reads.
Maybe.
Maybe. Counsel could be an attorney or not.
Huh? Well, typically, though, I think you would interpret counsel to mean an attorney.
Okay.
To my knowledge, when we've had pro se appellants who have appeared, and there's been a group of, more than one, they usually kind of choose a spokesperson amongst themselves, and then that person is the one who kind of does the nitty-gritty. So I'm not sure if that's what you're thinking of.
Yes, and they didn't want to hire an attorney. They selected someone from there to represent. We should allow, I would think, allow people. If you're serious enough, you're going to have an attorney. If you're foolish enough not to bring an attorney, we should say they couldn't do it, especially if they don't.
I have to agree. One of the things that I like about the appeal process that the State Environmental Commission has is that the public can come forward. I mean, somebody, an interested party can. I would hate to see us make this purely a legal, an attorney-type appeal process. I like the idea that people, John Q. Public, can come in front of an appeal panel like ours. So I agree with you.
If I may, I think in almost any arena, a person can come into before a court, a magistrate, and represent themselves. And I don't think that's what this is. This proposal that Rosemarie has presented to you doesn't address that. Is that if you're going to show up with an attorney in a contested matter, that attorney needs to be licensed in the state of Nevada so that they understand our rules of evidence, they have a better working knowledge of what's before you. That wouldn't, Rosemarie's example of a pro se group where they just pick one spokesperson, they're still pro se. That's still a representative. But I would have concern if you had a pro se person hire Joe Schmo paralegal as their representative. That's not pro se. That's somebody who's basically practicing law without being a lawyer, and I would have concerns over that. So I would draw that distinction. And also, I think that how we would see this particular provision carried out if we were to work on the language with you is that the requirement of an attorney license in Nevada be for contested cases. So if you're doing regulatory work and somebody comes in and they have an attorney and that attorney is from California and they just want to give you a speech about why they think this regulation is good, that's fine. What we're talking about is really the down and dirty contested evidentiary cases that require a little bit more specialized knowledge of our laws.
But it still would not preclude somebody from representing themselves.
Absolutely. I think you have big constitutional issues if you force somebody to get an attorney. But that's different than having a non-lawyer representative act as a lawyer.
But as I understand the proposed amendment, it would allow a person who's not licensed in Nevada to appear on behalf of an appellant if the representative, the counsel, was associated with the name of the bar.
Right, a pro hoc vice.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, that would imply that when you say by association that they would have to be admitted pro hoc vice. They could not just have counsel, Nevada counsel at the table with them.
I would envision that they'd have to comply with our state bar rules. And so, yeah, that's how I would see that. And maybe that needs just that language needs to be flushed out a little bit.
Well, and yeah, maybe that's something for the commission's attorney to speak to if the proposed language would require pro hoc vice admission or just having an associate attorney at the table who's licensed in Nevada.
We could go either way. I mean,
it probably ought to be resolved just because we know that's an ambiguity right now.
Right. We could specify that they have to be admitted by pro hoc vice, go through that formal step.
How do you feel about that?
My personal opinion is that if I wanted my brother to represent me, to speak for me, I should be able to let my brother come and represent me and speak for me. But if I'm going to have an attorney, the attorney should be sanctioned by the Nevada bar. I mean, that's pretty clear. That was my thinking right along, especially if I was not very articulate. Sometimes I'm not. My brother would be better off representing me.
Okay.
I think we should, you know, there's a process set in place for outside attorneys, the process you just spoke of, to come in and represent, because many of the companies that the division work with are national, multinational companies, and they'll bring in lawyers from San Francisco or whatever, as long as they go through the Nevada process to be recognized in the state of Nevada to practice this process, then I think it should be allowed.
And it's a civil process.
Right.
They all know it.
It's almost similar to like reciprocity, I would assume, with engineers. And okay.
Does anybody have anything else that they'd like to see changed or addressed in the rules? You're awfully silent, Mr. Klinger. I figured you had an opinion.
He was born with one.
He's making a lot of appeals, so I just figured he...
Well, this is Alan Klinger for the record. You're right, Rosemary. In 14 years, I've heard a lot of them. And I guess for framing the issue for the newer members, it's instructive to know that we've come a considerable distance in those 14 years in terms of our rules of practice. We had, previous to these, spent inordinate amounts of time, both from staff, from administrators, from the appeals panel, in terms of dealing with the appeals, because it was an almost Wild West atmosphere. I well remember the hearing in Las Vegas that we finally decided we need rules of practice when someone brought a live chicken into the appeal hearing and it began to talk. And it was very humorous, but yet it kind of brought to a point that it's not a free-for-all. And it has, I think, resulted in over the years a lessening of the armchair attorneys that want to just come out and be Perry Mason and, you know, whip the NDEP as part of their stage act. And so I think it's served a useful purpose, and I view this only as a refinement of that. And we have been very careful to, again, to not thwart the democratic process and allow people to have their voice. I think one of the things we've been known for over the years as a commission in our appeal hearings is I often hear that when people walk away, we may not have given them the decision they want, but they are very confident that their concerns have been heard and dealt with in a very direct and democratic way. So that should be our hallmark, you know, going forward. And I think the qualification for the bar is just reasonable in terms of process. And I understand now from the hearings that we had recently, I can see the problem with the evidentiary issue and why it should be that way. So I just view this as a further refinement of the process, and I don't think we're being overly limiting in what we're proposing.
Okay.
And that's why my silence has been so notable.
I want to make sure that the commission is clear also on the evidence part, in case there's any comments, especially from those members that have been on these hearing panels. It concerns me when we're addressing permits or permit appeals, when we are presented with information that was not presented to the department. And so the department makes the decision based on the information and the information they get or receive from the permittee, and then the permittee may not like it or may not agree with it, but for whatever reason, it's appealed, whatever. And then it comes to the commission, and we are presented with information that the department did not have to use in their determination. So I don't know how you feel about this, but it is a concern of mine, and I thought we should make that clear to the commission that that's one of the things that we need to address for these new rules. Any comments or concerns or questions on that particular element?
This is Tom Porta for the record. I would agree, Jim. The agency makes a decision based on a set of facts. And when somebody appeals that decision and it comes to us for resolution, then we should have those same set of facts to make our decision on and not allow in, you know, outside information over the months that happened between the time the decision was made and the time it appeared before the SEC. So, this, you know, strikes a fairness that we make that decision based on the same information that the agency had.
Mr. Chairman, Alan Coyner for the record, what would you consider good cause for failure to submit then if we have that clause just to take the time to look at number 3? Under what circumstance would there be good cause for failure to submit? Would there be an example? And then going a little further, if there was a decision made to allow the new evidence, would it be based on a 2-3 vote, I mean 2 of 3? Majority vote of the appeal panel. I hear what Commissioner Porta is saying, and I agree wholeheartedly that introduction of new evidence is not advisable, and as a rule, I would exclude it. But I guess in that case, then why do we even have that clause in there? For what possible situation are we addressing that?
I can give an example. It would be very remote, but you could have a situation where evidence did not exist at the time that the record was perfected for the agency decision. And I'm just going to make this up, but in another context, you could have had a whole new set of scientific experiments that had not been publicly made available, but were material to this particular issue, whatever it was. That might be a case where if the evidence was literally not available at the time, it might be something that the commission would want to consider. Now, it wouldn't have to, but there, if it were so so relevant and so probative, you might say, wow, our world has changed. You know, we have one less planet in this, the solar system than we thought we had, something like that. But as I say, I can't imagine that would happen very often.
Bill, on your example, what I can think of offhand might be some monitoring report data that might come out after the permit has issued, because this kind of reminds me a little bit of a Ponderosa dairy appeal, which is already concluded, where because there was such a time lag between the time the appeal was filed and the hearing actually was held, I think there may have been more than a year that had passed. There was monitoring wells data that came out during that interim, which obviously the division wouldn't have had at the time the permit was issued, because it was afterwards. And I think the commission did find that to be relevant to this decision.
That's just Pointer's question also about if the hearing panel would decide or wanted to, how would it be handled? Be handled by majority vote?
I would do it by majority vote.
Of the panel?
Of the panel.
I think it's a bit, this is Tom Porta again, I think it's a bit of a slippery slope. You know, and we still have to make that call for good cause about the evidence. Wouldn't it be more appropriate if there were new evidence that, we remanded back to the agency for consideration prior to coming back again to us after that, and let them weigh the information, make the decision, either uphold their existing ruling or whatever it is, and then if the appellants still want to appeal the case, then appeal it back to the SEC.
I would agree with that, Tom. I wholeheartedly agree with that. John, as I mentioned, other, I'm going to say, outside the box factors like budget, money. These hearings are not just little half day affairs. They're going into a number of days, and I'm always cognizant as a government worker of what it costs to do this. And if we did what you're saying, Tom, I think it would simplify a lot. They save a lot of time on.
And I would agree with that too. I would agree with it too. This really relates to purposes of addressing new evidence. But I would agree that the proper remedy, if we thought it was going to be material to the decision, would be to remand it.
Colleen?
Well, I'm not sure that's what happened in the Ponderosa case. I'm not sure that's what the result was.
I guess I'd also like to say that this is just the first cut at the language, and I think we may be able to come up with some better language that would provide more definition of what good cause is, rather than it being kind of open-ended and just an up-down vote of the commission. So we might be able to come up with some better language. And then the other thing I'd like to say is that if new evidence becomes available, there's more monitoring data, whatever, typically, there are processes within the permitting process that would allow them to go back and request a modification anyway from the agency directly. So they wouldn't necessarily have to appeal the permit. They could just request a modification based on this new information directly from us. So
let me direct a question to Tom and Alan. In these appeal hearings, I believe it's possible that the appellants may feel they're going to get further with the commission than they are the agency, and therefore take their case to the agency, to the commission. What are your feelings about that?
Well, of course, you're asking me to think about intent. It does follow that the appeal is a long endpoint for a fairly lengthy process. So there should have been an ample opportunity, and usually there is. I mean, again, in 14 years, I've heard a bunch of these, and my conviction is that the department, the division, deals adequately with people's concerns. They have a voice, they have a process, and usually it's a very few cases that actually end up coming on appeal. It's usually resolved through that process. So to then single out those amongst those that say, well, I've got a better chance hearing it on appeal because of the commission rather than just dealing with the internal processes of the division, I'm not too concerned about that, Jim. I guess that doesn't, to me, I can't even point to one in the 14 years that I'm aware of where I felt that was the case either. So I think that's a very minor concern.
Okay.
Yeah, I can only think of maybe a couple instances where I thought the permittee was, you know, kind of taking a second bite at the apple, if you will, going to the commission. And you know, to try to make that judgment on intent would be very difficult for anybody. If they're aggrieved by the decision by the agency, you know, they have the right to appeal it, whether their intent is to take the second bite at the apple or they feel they really got some legitimate concerns that they need to have heard and the commission act on.
Thank you. Other comments, questions, Colleen?
Could I add something from the agency's perspective too? Because I think that we work very closely with the permittees to try and ensure that the permit that gets issued is not appealable. And we also would not be going to appeal if we didn't feel that that we have done everything we possibly could to get things addressed, and if we weren't convinced that the permit that we issued was bulletproof.
Okay. Other comments, questions, discussion, commission members?
Staff has a comment, if that'd be all right. Many of these appeals that I've found, a lot of people try to appeal things that are outside of the permit and outside of the decision and are really issues that really are not ripe for appeal or could be appealed. And in many cases, staff has worked with those potential appellants and talked them out of appeals successfully. So there is that issue.
But John, tell me where you're going with that as far as what the commission's role is here. I mean, I know that's a big part of your job, and we all owe you a debt of gratitude for what you do in that area. So where are you going with it?
Well, it really doesn't, the commission doesn't have a role in it, obviously, until an appeal is filed. But I think just for the members, they need to know that appeals are filed that the commission never sees because the appellants decide to withdraw their appeals. I guess that's the only point I'm making.
If I may, I think to John's point, Rosemary's language, I think, attempts to get at that by citing in the first one, the 445B893. And again, this is just draft language. We're not here to vote on it, as I understand, or you're not here to vote on it. But the reference to an appeal to the commission must be based upon one or more of the grounds set forth in subsection 3 of NRS 233B135. That's the Administrative Procedure Act. And that actually references judicial review standards. So basically, her language suggests that you adopt the standard that would be for judicial review, not just for commission review. And those include some bullet points that limit the scope of an appeal. And then it's obviously, you know, when we file a motion to dismiss that says they're outside of the scope of the appeal, you have every right to deny that appeal even before you hear it, if it truly is outside the scope. But some of these bullet points are that it's in violation of a constitutional or statutory provision, that it's in excess of statutory authority of the agency, that it's made upon an unlawful procedure, that it's affected by other error of law, that it's clearly erroneous, or that it's arbitrary and capricious. So those are the standards that this draft is asking you to adopt as far as your appellate standards, which hopefully would help weed out some of those concerns. Because we see that too. We see a lot of zoning issues that are essentially appealed at has agency issues, and that, you know, that happens all the time. So hopefully that can get help you knock out some of those appeals if we can adopt language, you know, in that, in this ballpark.
One question, and this is for judicial review. So this is beyond the SEC. If somebody requests judicial review of the commission's decision at 135?
233B135 is a judicial review statute. Okay. But what this language does in this proposed language
right.
says is putting that same standard on your ability
right.
to review.
Right. And that and then I would assume then, because I think in other statutes within the division's purview, there's language similar to a party aggrieved by a decision of the agency. And that would have to be reconciled, I think, with this.
I think there's a lot of statutory crossover that we're going to have to deal with. Okay. Once you get what you want here, we're going to have to address some similar statutes.
Right.
And because even like the, I think it, the statute is nowhere reflected in here that says that any party aggrieved can appeal an order, permit, or any agency decision. And in my view, some of those need to be parceled out because an appeal of a permit might be a totally different animal than an appeal of an administrative order, like a, like stipulated penalties or something like that. So you might want to have separate paragraphs that talk about right. those types of standards. But that's a statutory issue, not a regulatory issue. But
right.
I just think there's going to be cleanup.
Right.
This is going to be a larger job than
right.
this.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Just for clarification, and historically we've accepted appeals on basically anything. Has that pretty much been wide open as far as anybody's right to appeal a decision? So this is going to become quite restrictive compared to past practices, I would
say. I don't know that in practice it's restrictive. I think that you all have done a pretty good job of, at the end of the day, narrowing down what the issues are, but you might take 2 days of hearings to get there. And so this just gives you a little bit more flexibility. I mean, we are always saying the same thing. You know, I mean, when I do them, I'm standing up and saying, that's a zoning issue, you know, or a water permit doesn't have anything to do with air issues. And, so we're always trying to limit it, and you all tend to do a good job about that. But
mm-hmm.
what this is doing is just giving some more guidance for you within your own regulations to do that. That's how I think about it.
I think Al did a good job when he paraphrased earlier about last 14 years where we've come from, what we're doing. In my impression of what we're doing today is I do not want to restrict, and I think that's a good comment you just made, restrict what we're trying to accomplish, but we certainly need to get through it as efficiently and effectively as we can. I don't want anybody not to appeal. They feel they got a valid appeal to the commission. That's what we're for. So I hope the intent here, everybody understands the intent, is to just make our process more efficient and effective, not try to weed out appeals or stop appeals or take people's, or further try to limit people's rights. That is not the intent. I hope everybody understands that. Any other comments? Tom?
Yeah, one other comment. If we do, I kind of call it putting some sideboards on the process for us as we make these decisions and appeals is what we're working on here. My question is, before we convene, say, the three-member panel and we're set to go with the show and everything, when we talk about these things in 135, is there a way that someone can make the call, the chairman or someone on the commission, that one of these bullet points has been met or not met, thereby precluding a full-blown appeals process? So in other words, John gets the form. It states the reasons why they're appealing the decision. And let's say it doesn't fall within 135. In other words, it's not an appealable matter. Is there a mechanism we can set up that we, you know, bypass it going to a three-member panel, or do we still have to convene the three-member panel to make that call?
I think that's happening de facto by John right now. We're not talking to John about
this. I hope not.
No.
Well, I mean, that decision has to be made by a three-member panel.
Okay.
Yeah, the only way that an appeal doesn't happen is a notice never occurs and the appellant withdraws the appeal and sends me some written information of that fact. And then the appeal is withdrawn and never seen.
So John, then, don't you have discussions with the appellant or the potential appellant to make sure they understand what's appealable and where they are and what they're doing or not? Am I going too far with what, how you help us?
No, that's the exact discussion I have with the appellants. Do they have a case? Who erred? You know, did NDEP make a mistake? You know, I try to get them to put their case on the table, and if it's they don't have a case, they soon realize that.
Okay. Well, that's what I meant by it's kind of happening de facto. Because I know when they look at it, they finally figure out, wow, you're right, John. And I know probably you have done this in more cases than in the light of how many have actually come to an appeal process versus how many have decided not to because of some of your help. Tom, what are you looking for? Something more formal?
No, I think this kind of addresses it. I think maybe in the Form 3 that the appellants fill out, if we do decide to go with 135 here of the NRS and these bullet points, that be made clear in the form when they complete this of what of these bullets are they feel they did not get a fair shake on by the division, and I think that would help then. And that way when John gets the form and he reads over, they can say, we feel it was an excess of statute authority by the agency, and here's why. So maybe just more clarity on that Form 3, on the appeals form.
We were thinking about doing some expansion of Form 3, and then I think, you know, to further address that point, once it gets past John as a gatekeeper, obviously if it's my case and I disagree or one of the other DAGs disagrees, we would file a motion to dismiss saying, this is why we don't think it meets one of these qualifications. And then you'd have the opportunity to address that on the motion basis.
But it's still a panel decision of once that motion is filed. It's not something that one person acting alone can do.
Exactly.
Further discussion? Comments? Have we covered all three aspects of this now, in your opinion, Rosemary?
You've talked about kind of the, you know, three of the areas that you had before you. And like I said, we're looking at making some changes in some other areas as well. And just kind of go over what the process is from here on out. If you guys agree that we should go ahead and go forward and make some changes to these regs, we'll have to have a workshop. I'm not sure what the timing on that workshop will be because we were trying to do this so that we could have the regulations ready for you to be approved and adopted at your February meeting. And that's still what our goal is. I'm just not sure how we will get there. But, you know, there will have to be, this has to go to LCD. You have to get the governor's office on board. And like I said, we'll have to have a workshop. Now, John will send you guys, you know, the regulations that are going to be workshops. You're welcome to come and attend those I don't know if the workshop will be video conference. We haven't gotten that far in our discussions, but welcome to either submit comments in writing if you can attend, or you can, you know, come to the workshop and see, you know, what we're going with. You've given some valuable feedback for us to look at as far as changing the rest. And whether it will take on the form that you see before you, I don't know.
Well, when would this commission, let's say the commission says Rosemary go forward.
Right.
When would we have the opportunity to see how this thing finally falls out or what it looks like?
Workshop.
And then we would have a what I might call a second shot at it in February. Yay or nay?
Correct.
possible. It's possible, but no guarantees on February 15th.
Oh, yeah.
But it definitely is possible between now and then. If NDEP and SEC staff sit down and draft up a regulation that's pretty tight, and we workshop it, and we don't get a lot of public comments, then we could move with that regulation pretty quickly to LCB and the governor's office. So, and LCB has a 30-day time turnaround, so it's possible we could get it back and get it on the agenda for February 15th, but no guarantee.
My experience with the governor's office is they want to see this proposal first before we even start down, because they may not say it fits within the executive order.
The other thing that's kind of complicating, though, is the executive order expires at the end of December, and the hearing is in February.
That's true.
So,
under the wire.
So the discussion I've had with Leo is that I'm supposed to draft up kind of an overview of it, get it to him, and he's going to bring it up at the next cabinet meeting and talk about what kind of
transition
they want, yeah, and if they want to continue to be engaged or just be aware of them or how it's going to work.
Colleen, is it out of order for when you do give that to the governor that the commission members could also see that draft? You know, so you see how it looks, or should we have to wait until the workshop?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm necessarily going to have to give him regs. I just need to kind of give an overview of what the regs are going to do and how they fit in with the executive order. And then they'll discuss it and get back to me. But the other thing that we've done is worked on regs, sent them to LCB, and then if the governor doesn't like them and doesn't want them to move forward, we can always pull them off the agenda. So it doesn't completely stop the process, because it is pretty time-consuming to get things through LCB and get their drafted version back to go to public notice with. So we've got a little bit of time, I think, to work through this with the governor's office while we're in parallel drafting the reg changes themselves.
Right. I think my concern is for the commission members is that at the earliest possible convenience of you, we know how it's going to look. Right now, we're not sure how exactly it looks. We got some ideas, but since the commission has to live with this, it should be nice if we knew what's going forward. And so I would just ask that of you if you can.
Yeah, because like John said, we've got a 30-day public notice period, and then 30 days before that, we have to get into LCB. So I think we've got a couple of weeks for us to be able to work with John and Rosemary and get a draft in pretty good shape so that you can see the direction we're going before we send it across the street.
Tom?
I'd like to add one other thing for the workshop purposes. You obviously have some language form by the time the workshop is, but I'd also like to see if you're proposing any language changes to Form 3 at that workshop, and also any potential conflicting other statutes, and you know what the agency's intent is to move on with those that change, say, during the next session, just so we have some idea how this is all going to fit together. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Great. I would certainly support that. Any other comments? Questions from the commission? Rosemary, you have anything you want to?
No, I think that covers everything.
Okay.
Maya, do you have anything?
I don't think so. I'm looking forward to working with you, Rosemary. I just think we'll get something out soon.
So you guys feel you have direction to go forward and do this from us? Do we need a motion on this?
I would like a motion and a vote. And just simply say, yes, you would like to see us go forward and make some changes to the rules of practice, or no, if that's what your preference is.
Okay.
I so move. Catherine Lambert.
Second.
Second, Kim.
To regulations? Yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion? None? All those in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Any nays? No nays. It passes unanimously. Okay, thank you. Now we go back to our last item on here, which is again public comment. Anybody come in that wants to offer any public comment? There's none here in Las Vegas. I see none in Carson City. So with that, John, any comments you want to make before we close the meeting?
None whatsoever.
Okay, the meeting is adjourned then. Thank you very much, all of you, for coming on this special meeting.